Welcome to Washington Today for Monday, May 15th, 2023. I'm Gary Starkoff. Thanks a lot for joining us today. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said he thinks the country needs a deal to raise the federal debt ceiling by this weekend. President Biden says he's optimistic about reaching a deal. The two are scheduled to meet again tomorrow. Encounters at the U.S. southern border have dropped sharply over the past few days, with Customs and Border Patrol reporting an approximately 50% decrease in encounters compared to the days before the expiration of the Title 42 Border Authority. And it's National Police Week here in D.C. We'll hear from today's memorial that honored law enforcement officers who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Now, we'll have the latest on the debt ceiling talks coming up, but first we want to start just outside Washington, D.C. in Fairfax, Virginia. Two staffers for Virginia Democratic Representative Jerry Connolly were hospitalized today after a person armed with a metal baseball bat entered the congressman's district office and began attacking staffers. Representative Connolly told CNN the man asked for him and then struck a senior aide on the head and another on the side. Congressman said he was at a ribbon cutting for a food bank when the incident took place. Here's the statement from his office. This morning, an individual entered my district office armed with a baseball bat and asked for me before committing an act of violence against two members of my staff. The individual is in police custody and both members of my team were transferred to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The statement goes on to say, quote, the thought that someone would take advantage of my staff's accessibility to commit an act of violence is unconscionable and devastating. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries also issued a statement that says, in part, the safety of our members and our staff remains of paramount importance, particularly given the increased instances of political violence in our country. I have asked the House Sergeant-at-Arms and the U.S. Capitol Police to continue their focus on collaborating with our members. We must collectively take every available precaution to protect members and our staff who serve the American people with patriotism and passion and deserve to do so without fear for their safety. Virginia's two senators also issued statements. Tim Kaine tweeted, quote, horrific, praying for these public servants and Team Connolly. Mark Warner tweeted, quote, intimidation and violence, especially against public servants, has no place in our society. This is an extraordinarily disturbing development, and my thoughts are with the staff members who were injured. Back here in Washington, with the clock ticking on debt ceiling talks, here's House Speaker Kevin McCarthy speaking in the Capitol.
I still think we're far apart. It doesn't seem to me yet that they want it. It just seems that they want to look like they're in a meeting, but they're not.
Sorry.
They're not talking anything serious. And in the meantime, we just watched the CBO come out and say we're $100 billion further in debt. And so seems more like they want a default than a deal.
Do you think that he should be going on this foreign trip on Wednesday if you guys don't have a deal coming out Tuesday?
Look, I think we've got to have a deal done by this weekend to be able to have a timeline to be able to pass it in both houses. He hasn't taken it serious. All that waited 100 days to meet.
Thank you.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy on the state of debt ceiling talks with the White House. And we heard questions there from NBC News' Ali Vitale. Speaker McCarthy's House Republican majority wants a debt limit increase to be tied to cuts in federal spending. The president and congressional Democrats want a so-called clean increase that isn't tied to other policies. And the New York Times writing today, quote, with time running out to strike a deal, broad areas of negotiation have emerged, including fixed caps on federal spending, reclaiming unspent funds designated for the COVID-19 emergency, stiffer work requirements for federal benefits, and expedited permitting rules for energy projects. On Sunday, President Biden told reporters that he believes the two sides will reach an agreement.
What I've learned a long time ago, and you know as well as I do, is never as good to characterize a negotiation in the middle of a negotiation. I remain optimistic because I'm a congenital optimist, but I really think there's a desire on their part as well as ours to reach agreement. I think we'll be able to do it.
President and Speaker McCarthy are scheduled to meet again tomorrow to continue negotiations. And that trip to Japan that the speaker mentioned, that was a topic on a media conference call today with National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
You sounded fairly confident that Biden is going to leave Wednesday as scheduled on the Asia trip. Is that, I mean, is there still some doubts given there's no breakthrough on the debt talks, or is he just going to go ahead and leave it for them to negotiate while he's gone?
Well, as you know, they may be able to have a, they may be having a, another meeting with congressional leaders before he leaves. But we are still planning to leave as scheduled on Wednesday.
President is scheduled to leave on Wednesday afternoon for the G7 meeting in Hiroshima, Japan. That meeting is scheduled for May 19th to 21st. He will then visit Papua New Guinea and then go to Sydney, Australia on May 24th for the Quad Leaders Summit. Both the House and Senate are in this week. The House will consider several police-related bills in observance of National Police Week, including a resolution memorializing fallen police officers killed in the line of duty. Later this week, the House will vote on a bill to allow immigrants convicted of assaulting law enforcement officers to be deported, and another measure allowing federal police officers to buy firearms after they're retired from official use. Senate lawmakers will continue debating more of President Biden's judicial nominations, including a confirmation vote today for Brad Garcia to serve as a judge on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. That's the nation's second highest court. If confirmed, he would be the first Latino to serve on that court. That surge at the U.S. southern border that many expected to happen following the expiration of Title 42 isn't happening. Blas Nunez Neto, Chief Operating Officer for Customs and Border Protection, said on a conference call with reporters today, quote, "Over the last 3 days, we have seen approximately a 50% decrease in encounters compared to the days leading up to the end of Title 42. He went on to say, quote, "It is still early, though, and we are mindful that smugglers will continue to look for ways to take advantage of the change in border policies." But one Texas Republican, Jody Arrington, says he's skeptical.
Again, I don't think the American people are buying it. And for the administration, the secretary, the president's spokesperson to say it's under control, the border's secure, when the Secretary of Homeland Security's own numbers contradict that. But yeah, the president has not complied with court orders with respect to remain in Mexico, and he hasn't complied with congressional directives with respect to the border wall. So this guy has made clear he is dug in. He's going to pander to the left, and he's going to open this border, and millions more are going to come in if we don't exercise as Texans and all sovereign states our right of self-defense. It's these are extenuating circumstances, and it's going to require extraordinary leadership to be able to stop it ultimately. But it's not going to come from the White House. That's clear.
House Budget Committee Chair Jody Arrington on Fox News earlier today. And here's Connecticut Democratic Senator Chris Murphy, who says that doing anything on immigration and border security will be difficult.
Republicans have had multiple opportunities to come to the table and pass immigration reform that would fix the problem at the border. And my belief is that while you have a small group of Republicans who legitimately want to engage, the majority of that party delights at chaos at the border. You saw some of my colleagues on Tuesday, as soon as votes were done, rush down to the border to take smiling photographs with the Border Patrol, essentially celebrating the fact that there was chaos because they believe that there's political gain to be had. So I think Americans know that it's Republicans, not Democrats, that have been sitting on the outside when it comes to fixing our broken immigration system.
Are you supportive of reinstituting Title 42? There's a bill in the Senate that could do that. It's gotten a little more support from Democrats, particularly ones that are on the ballot in 2024, which actually you are too, though not in as purple of a state as others. Would you be reluctantly supportive of that if you thought it was a tool they needed?
I'm not, because that just pushes the problem down the line, right? That just gives you one or two more years of individuals being denied entry. Whenever Title 42 is lifted, you are going to have this temporary problem of massive numbers of new people arriving at the border. And by the way, Republicans have been castigating the president for not lifting COVID restrictions fast enough. The only COVID restriction Republicans seem to want to keep in place is the one that keeps people that don't look like them from coming into the United States.
Why do you think the economic argument hasn't worked to get Republicans to the table? Because you can, our inflation problem, it's you can make one case on the free money issue with the Fed. You can make some case there. But the real issue is we have a labor shortage, and it's having an issue on wages. That is our economic problem, yet it has no impact.
So despite my tough words for how Republicans approach this issue, I think there is still an opportunity, at least in the Senate, for bipartisan immigration reform. Maybe not the size of the bill in 2013, but I do think there are a group of Republicans in the Senate who recognize that we have this massive labor shortage everywhere in the country. You see help wanted signs, and that there is an ability to help the American economy by letting more people into the country legally. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see some discussions begin in the Senate in the wake of the House action last week to try to find some common ground in immigration
reform. You think that in a piecemeal direction? It's always going to be piecemeal at this point. The word comprehensive, just throw it away.
I think right now you've got to do the pieces that are most urgent. And to me, that's border security, right. That's asylum reform, and then that's doing something about the Dreamers who are here and need some help.
Senate Appropriations Committee member Chris Murphy, Democrat of Connecticut, on Meet the Press yesterday. For more on the week ahead on the Hill, starting with the state of the debt ceiling talks, here's Morgan Chalfant from Semaphore News.
Well, negotiators from the Hill and the White House met over the weekend on Saturday. They're going to continue those discussions today. The big four, which is Biden, Speaker McCarthy, Leader Schumer, and Minority Leader McConnell, are expected to meet tomorrow. At least that's what President Biden indicated yesterday. And it seems like the White House is approaching this pretty optimistically. There were comments from the president, comments from other senior officials over the weekend where they expressed confidence that they're getting somewhere. But there are still a lot of issues to work out. And it's, you know, the clock is just ticking down.
We saw that Friday meeting was postponed. Why confidence during a postponement of a meeting? What's giving folks confidence?
Well, I think that the staff level negotiations are moving forward and proceeding. And so I think the administration at least feels pretty good about that. But clearly there wasn't enough progress for them to meet again on Friday. So the real test will be what happens tomorrow and, you know, what's on the table tomorrow when they do meet. Like, is there something that they can come to an agreement on? And I think we'll get a lot more of a sense of that tomorrow or even before tomorrow.
Do we have a sense of the general pieces of the puzzle that's trying to be put together at this point?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of areas I think they're talking about. One is permitting reform. We've obviously seen Democrats and Republicans lay out proposals on that front. There's other issues such as restrictions for federal assistance programs. The president said over the weekend that he wasn't open to that for Medicaid work requirements, but other programs potentially, budget caps. So there are a number of issues in the mix. But it's just really unclear right now if there can be enough consensus to come in an agreement that can actually get through the House.
So remind folks what the president's schedule is this week. And we keep talking about that ticking clock. How is that factoring into the president's travel schedule?
Right. So he's supposed to leave for the G7 later this week. It's pretty clear that that is his intention right now. But of course, if there's a need for him to be here, he may delay that trip. I think he suggested last week he could even potentially appear virtually. So that's up in the air. I think right now the White House is moving forward with the intention he's going to leave. And then, of course, Janet Yellen has said that June 1 is when the government could run out of money. I think we could see her potentially speak again this week in terms of an update, but they're definitely trying to get some sort of resolution as quickly as possible because of that potential date.
Switching gears from debt ceiling to Title 42 and immigration, fallout from the end of Title 42. What are you expecting on Capitol Hill this week?
So there are these bipartisan negotiations in the Senate side. Of course, the House last week passed their big border bill. That isn't going where in the Senate as it stands. But Kyrsten Sinema, Tom Tillis have been talking about immigration reform efforts. They've all obviously introduced this bill that would basically extend version of Title 42 for another 2 years. I think, you know, there will be kind of people will be watching whether or not that gets additional momentum this week. But, you know, Congress has talked about doing immigration reform for years. No resolution. So I would say I'm pretty pessimistic of them actually getting something that can pass.
What's the latest on Congressman George Santos? We saw him pleading not guilty to 13 counts of money laundering and other charges last week. Is he going to be back on Capitol Hill this week?
I think that he is expected to be back. Yes, my colleague Kadia Goba has been really covering these investigations into him, et cetera. I think that there's been more calls for him to resign. Kevin McCarthy obviously hasn't said that. I think there'll be added attention to whether or not the speaker weighs in on that further. But he is saying that he's fighting these charges, we'll see where the proceedings go. But he certainly hasn't shown that he's going to step away anytime soon.
And then to your national security reporting, the latest on the Hill this week when it comes to the war in Ukraine and U.S. funding, what are you watching for on your beat?
So obviously there's a ton of attention to, this counteroffensive that Ukraine is going to be mounting. There's this divide within the Republican Party about aid to Ukraine. The White House hasn't submitted a proposal for another funding package yet, but I do expect that to come, in the coming weeks and months. And I think, we'll see that debate play out. There are certainly plenty of Republican supporters of Ukraine on the Hill that want to see a robust funding package, but there are all those other voices like Marjorie Taylor Greene who've been very skeptical of additional funding. And so I think that's really where the attention will be on Capitol Hill once that debate starts to get going a little bit early now.
Morgan Chalfant from Semaphore News on this morning's Washington Journal. You can see more at cspan.org/Washington Journal and on the C-SPAN Now video app. You're listening to Washington Today. Welcome back to Washington Today. Special Prosecutor John Durham released a 300-page report this afternoon on his examination of possible FBI misconduct in its investigation of the relationship between Russia and Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. According to the Associated Press, the report contains, quote, withering criticism of the Bureau, but a meager court record that fell far short of the former president's prediction he would uncover the crime of the century. The roughly 300-page report catalogs what Special Counsel Durham says were a series of missteps by both the FBI and the Justice Department. And in a statement today, the FBI said its conduct during the investigation, quote, was the reason that current FBI leadership already implemented dozens of corrective actions, which have now been in place for some time. Had those reforms been in place in 2016, the missteps identified in the report could have been prevented. This report reinforces the importance of ensuring the FBI continues to do its work with the rigor, objectivity, and professionalism the American people deserve and rightly expect. You can see the entire Durham report and read it for yourself at cspan.org. President Biden has nominated Dr. Monica Bertinelli to be the new director of the National Institutes of Health. She currently leads the National Cancer Institute. Her resume includes being the chief of surgical oncology at the Dana-Farber-Brigham Cancer Center and head of both the Alliance for Clinical Trials in Oncology and the American Society of Clinical Oncology. In a statement today, the president said, quote, Dr. Bertinelli has advanced my cancer moonshot to end cancer as we know it. She has brought together partners and resources from different sectors to launch groundbreaking efforts in cancer prevention and early detection, a national navigation program for childhood cancers, and additional programs to bring clinical trials to more Americans. If confirmed, she will replace Dr. Frances Collins and become just the second female to ever lead the National Institutes of Health. And Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was in the United Kingdom today. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak greeted him with a handshake and a hug after his helicopter landed at Chequers. That's the British leader's official country retreat. It's Zelensky's second trip to the UK since the Russian invasion and the fifth European country he's visited in the past 3 days after Italy, the Vatican, Germany, and France. He was in England to press the country to give the Ukrainian military fighter jets to mount a counteroffensive against Russian forces. And Turkey's presidential election appears likely to go to a second round after neither candidate received more than 50% of the vote in a weekend election. The runoff is scheduled for May 28th and will decide whether the current president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, will continue his more than 20-year rule of the country or his opponent, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, will take over. Turkey is, of course, a key member of NATO. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby talked about it with reporters earlier today.
On Turkey, obviously, like many in the press, we're closely monitoring it. It certainly looks like it's going to be going to a runoff. I would say, number one, we congratulate the Turkish people for expressing their desires at the ballot box in a peaceful way. President Biden's looking forward to working with whoever the winner is. And again, that's not clear right now. And I think I'd leave it at that. I mean, the Turkish people get to decide what their government looks like. And they obviously took their citizenship seriously here by going to the ballot box. And we're just gonna have to see how it plays out.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby. It is National Police Week here in D.C., and today on Capitol Hill, the National Peace Officers Memorial Service in remembrance of fallen officers. Among the speakers, Attorney General Merrick Garland.
In just a few minutes, we will hear the names of 443 officers who comprise this year's Roll Call of Heroes. These are individuals who answered the call to serve from a wide variety of backgrounds, bringing different perspectives and different experiences to their work. They served in big cities and small towns. Some served for decades and mentored generations of colleagues. Others had only just begun their careers. But each made the same promise: to serve and protect their communities. They promised that when a call for help came, they would answer. They promised that when a crisis arose in their community, they would respond. They promised that nothing, no danger, no threat, would stop them from showing up when they were needed the most. Each of the individuals we honor today kept that promise. I want to highlight just a few of their stories. During the 5.5 years that Corporal Ray Hamilton served with the Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office in Florida, he received not one, but two life-saving awards. He excelled as a law enforcement officer, as a crime scene investigator, a field training officer, and finally, a member of the Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office Special Response Team. On Christmas Eve last year, the special response team was called in when a domestic violence suspect refused to leave a residence. Corporal Hamilton and his team answered the call. The suspect shot Corporal Hamilton from a window, killing him. His wife, Renee, is here with us today. Thank you, Renee, for allowing us to honor your husband. Detective Maisha Stewart from Greenville, Mississippi, had only served with the Greenville Police Department for 2 years. But in that time, she graduated from the Mississippi Delta Community College Police Academy, became an investigator, and was named the 2021 Rookie of the Year. Her commitment to the Greenville community was evident in all of her work, including when she responded to a shots fired call last October. Detective Stewart did not make it home that night. She was shot and killed in the line of duty and taken from her loved ones, including her 3-year-old son. We join them in honoring the memory of Detective Stewart.
Attorney General Merrick Garland speaking at the National Peace Officers Memorial Service on Capitol Hill today in remembrance of fallen officers. You can see the whole ceremony at cspan.org. That's also where you can find this program as a podcast, specifically our podcast page, which is cspan.org/podcasts. You can also find it on the C-SPAN Now app and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And if you'd like more on the stories that are shaping Washington, subscribe to our evening newsletter, Word for Word. Just go to cspan.org/connect to subscribe. I'm Gary Sterikoff. Thanks a lot for listening today to Washington Today.